Hello and welcome to this week's Mal and Johnny Show. On today's show, we're going to concentrate on the Welsh singing legend, Dorothy Squires. Now, for people who don't know much about her, she was a massive star.
She was the Bassy before Bassy came up, if you like. In fact, she was the biggest, apparently, when she was on tour in the 40s and 50s. She topped the bill in every major theatre in the country. I'd hit records. The one was the Gypsy that people like Sinatra recorded later. I mean, she was just huge. She was with a guy called Billy Reid then. He was the band leader and he used to write all the songs for her.
And the family connection, because she was a Welsh girl from Llanelli, but your family wasn't from that part of Wales. How did you come to meet her? How did the family connection start?
Well, it was my dad really. He was in London. He was in an act called the Rolling Stones, would you believe?
Whatever happened to them, eh?
It's a band that he was in, because there was like a piano, bass, drums. He was the pianist and singer. Great. And he was in London and he was in an agent's office. And this girl bursts in, and she's about 16, right? And she says, "Can I have an audition, love?" And the agent said, "Who the hell are you? You've got an appointment?" "No." So he said, "Where are you from?" says my father. See, he sat at the piano, he was. She said, "Oh, what's an Ashley?" He said, "Oh, Welsh girl." He said, "Give it a chance, Joe." He said, "I'll play for her." Joe Kay was the agent. Anyway, I think he fancied it, really, because you're knowing my old man. Anyway, so he played for her, and he liked the voice, the agent. So he said, "Well, okay, I'll give you a chance," he said. "I'll put you on at the Osterley Hotel and you can do it one night and see how you go." And that was the first gig she ever got in London. Uh-huh. And she's just about to leave the office. And my father says, "Where are you staying, love?" She said, "I don't know yet. I left my bags at Paddington Station." So she had nowhere to stay because she'd come up from Llanelli on a day trip, right? No money in the pocket, just enough money to get to London. And anyway, my grandfather and grandmother at the time lived in Streatham. So he dragged her back to Streatham and she stayed with my grandparents for 6 months.
Wow.
Until she got on her feet. And then, you know, and she never forgot my old man for that. You know, she used to call my grandmother and grandfather Mammy and Pop.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Llanelli then. Was she from a showbiz family?
No, she was from a circus family. Well, not a circus, but a traveller's family. Like a fairground. I think her father used to run the coconut shies. And she was born in a caravan. She was one of those. She used to sing with a band, a local dance band called the Denzer Players. And they just used to do local gigs. And then she took the bit between the teeth and said, "I'm going to London, I'm going to make it big." I mean, nobody thought she could do it. Yeah. And off she went, and she had the guts and tenacity, and she was knocking on doors. And eventually she met this bloke, Billy Reid, who had an accordion band, right? So my old man said, "What the hell are you going with Billy Reid for?" He said, "You know, he's got this accordion band there on the way out." She said, "Well, I like him, see?" Anyway, she was in love with him, was what happened. He was much older than her. But it worked out because he wrote all these wonderful songs, you know. And they were hits all over the world. I got a letter somewhere that she wrote my old man when she was in Scotland, where she said that the Gypsy is selling like hotcakes, you know. Probably about 2-3 years, that's all. Mm. And she did a thing called Variety Bandbox, which was one of the big radio programs of the time. And she was a big hit on it, of course. But anyway, her records took off, and then they just toured then as Billy Reid, the composer and the voice. That was their bill matter, you know.
Yeah. And they made a small fortune, a big fortune.
Well, and you're talking about the 40s, and she told my mother, right, that the PRS 1 year was £35,000. 1940s. Can you imagine what that was today?
Millions.
Megabucks. Yeah.
Millions. A couple of things. I've been reading your book, and, you know, they bought this massive house, but they bought a theatre in Llanelli.
They did. When she was a big star now, right, she went back to Llanelli to show what she'd done, because I think people ridiculed her when she was a kid. "You're never going to be a star, you know." Mm. She used to play a ukulele or something. Anyway, was it the Astoria? I think it was.
That's right, yeah.
And I think it may have been a cinema at one time. I'm not sure. But anyway, she bought it and she did it up and she spent a lot of money on it. Mm. And then she'd put on pantomimes there and she'd put on shows. But the opening night was something to be seen. Apparently, it's in the Llanelli Star. You can get a back copy. It was mayhem because Billy Reid, who was a lover and a mentor, was still married. Nobody knew this. They all thought he was married to Dorothy, right? So the opening night, he turns up drunk with this woman on his arm and introducing her around as his wife. Dorothy went berserk. That's only Dorothy could go. And it was like a fight broke out. She smacked him in the chops. He grabbed hold of her. Somebody jumped on his back. The father jumped on his back. He fell on the floor, knocked the mayor over. It was one of those. It was like something out of a film, like a comedy film.
Carry on, Dorothy. Carry on, Dorothy. Yeah. They split up, and so he kept the theatre, which is strange. He kept the theatre in Llanelli, but she kept this
massive house.
I mean, it's a mansion, isn't it?
It was 23 rooms, and it was a swimming pool of 4 acres of land. And I stayed there many times. It burnt down in sad circumstances. But she fought him in court for it, because what happened was he'd offered to buy her a mink coat or something. She said, no, I don't want a mink coat. I want money to put down in this house. It had been turned into an old people's home or something, and she turned it back into a proper residence, you know. And she spent a lot of money on it, and it was really her home, you know. Mm. Mind you, like all Welsh people, she had all her family up there, didn't she? So he was getting a bit, cheesed off with this, because there was always all her family up there, aunties, uncles, and everybody. And I think, things went a bit bad. They split up. And I think the last straw was when he turned up with his wife on his arm, you know, and said, this is my wife.
The parties, as you describe in the book, are legendary, aren't they? They were filled with stars from showbiz, gangster type of thing going on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was sat next to Phil Spector one night. He only died last week.
Yeah.
I was sat, because he was a funny-looking guy, so with his funny wig and black glasses, and he's sitting next to me, because it was like probably about 30 or 40 people in there. So I didn't know who he was, you know. Nobody introduced me. I'm sat next to him. I said, Dorothy, who's this funny bloke? She said, Phil Spector. But she knew everyone. You know, you'd be there, there'd be Tom Jones there, Shirley Bassey would be there, Tony Hatch, Jackie Trent. And if you were in one of her parties, she'd always want you to get up and do something. Right. See?
Did you?
So so what happened was, she says to Jackie Trent, would you get up and sing a song? She says, no, Dot, I can't sing tonight. I got a bad throat. You can bleep this out if you like, but I got to tell you what she said. She said, you'll never be a singer as long as you get all up your ass. And then she said to me, John, will you sing a song? I said, aye, okay. Then she had the cheek to ask Tony Hatch to play for me. So he played for me and I sang a song. The thing with Dorothy, there was a misnomer. People thought she was a big drinker. Mm-hmm. Dorothy wasn't a big drinker. She got drunk very quickly. That was the problem, because she used to take amphetamines. After Roger left, they were legal at the time. They were like antidepressants. They were Purple Hearts is what they were. And of course she got hooked on them. Yeah. So she'd only have to have a brandies. I mean, she'd be high as a kite.
Yeah. Wow.
And she was hooked on them for nearly all her life. It was a shame, really, because they were given to her, you know, by the doctor because of the breakup of the marriage and all that, and she was in a bad way. But she always kept taking them. I got to tell you this. I went with her to Abbey Road, where she's making an album. And I just had a divorce at the time, but I'm in a bad way, right? And I'm in the car, we're coming back up the M4. By this time, she's living in Bray, because the big house had burnt down in Bexley, and she bought this other lovely place right on the river in Bray. So she's driving, I'm driving, and she had a big American car. She liked American cars. So we're going up the M4 now, and it's snowing, see? And I'm looking a bit glum. And she said, what's the matter with you? I said, a bit down. Dad. Ah, yes, and all, you know, those blow, they treat you, and Roger did to me. And then she gets all maudlin, and she says, stop the car, stop the car. I said, what do you mean stop the car? I'm on the M4. Stop the car. So I pulled up on the other hard shoulder. She jumped out, grabbed a handful of snow, got back in the car, stuffed a Purple Heart in my mouth, followed by the snow, and that was it. And we were fire kites, and we're up the M4. I mean, she was one of these characters you couldn't, you know.
Yeah, yeah. She met Roger at the house, at one of these parties, and he wasn't even invited.
No, what it was, Betty was her friend from Llanllwch. No, sorry, Porth. She was from Porth. Because they all lived in their house. They were all up there, you know. But she was her friend. She used to call her Boop, Betty Boop. And she was a bit of a film extra. She used to do a bit of film extra work. And she was doing something, and Roger was on the film. He's only had a small part, probably Walk on One or something. So she said, do you want to come to Dorothy's house for a party? We said, aye, all right, because he'd, you know, anything to, like, get a bit of kudos with other people. So he said, okay. So the party's in full swing, and the phone goes, and it's Roger on the phone, and he says, and Dorothy answers, who is it? Well, it's Roger. Betty's invited me to your party. Okay, well, I'll send my driver for you, she said. At the station, what do you look like? He said, I'm short, fat, and I'm bald. He was anything but. Anyway, he turned up and he made a play for her straight away, see. Because at this time she was single. She was about 34, I suppose, a good-looking woman, charismatic, big star. He's 23 or something like that. And he's hanging about at the end of the party, see. Because she did all the cooking, Dorothy. She's one of those. So she's in the kitchen potting about. And she said, aren't you going? The last train's going in a minute. He says, no, he said, I want, you know, she said, do you want another drink? He says, no, he said, I've got an ulcer, but they are fashionable, aren't they? She said, who writes your scripts? So anyway, he picked her up and he carried her up the stairs. And she had one of these big winding Gone with the Wind staircases. And he carried her upstairs and that was it. And then he moved in, but he was married to somebody else. He was married to a girl called Dawn. She was an ice skater. And she wrote a book called Saint He Ain't. But it never got published. Well, apparently, I mean, John Lloyd told me that she wrote for the Daily Express. He was a big fan of Dorothy. He used to run the fan club. And he told me that Roger went back to Dawn and said, look, stick with me and she'll make me a star and I'll come back. And she told him to get lost. That's exactly what he said. But the thing was, he was only like a part-time actor. He didn't do much at all. He couldn't get arrested. So Dorothy said, look, you're not going to make it in this country, Roger. She said, they only like people one eye and an half an ear all in this country, ugly people. So you've got to go to America where they appreciate good-looking blokes. So she had contacts in America, obviously, because she'd added records out there. So she took him to America and she started throwing these parties. And, you know, she told my mother that she only had $8 left at one point because she'd spent it all promoting him, right? Anyway, she came back to Britain because she needed more money, and she did a film. It was with Pat Kirkwood and a few more of them, and she was one of the name stars. And she got 1,500 quid for it, which is a lot of money. And she sent it back to the account in America to keep him going until she got back. And they got married in New York, and she had $8 left, as I said. That was it. But eventually he got a job, I think, with Warner Brothers first or MGM, one of them. I think it might have been Warner Brothers first. Anyway, he got the sack. Without looking at my book, I can't remember some of the research I did now, but he got the sack because he wasn't very good. And then he got in with another one. So he was either MGM first and then Warner Brothers or vice versa, I can't remember. And they lived in Hollywood for 8 years.
Was she still singing? Was she still singing? Because she gave up her career for him, didn't she?
She did. She said, I was happy to be a housewife. I was happy. He was happy. He was doing well. I was, you know, she was writing songs. She wrote a song called Tammy, Tell Me True, which was the sequel to the film Tammy that was with, who was in it? Sandra Dee, I think. Mm-hmm. So she wrote this song and she sent it into the studio. I think Roger took it in and Percy Faith was the arranger. She said one of the thrills of her life, she's sitting on a soundstage in a headscarf, like a 100-piece orchestra playing her song, you know. Must have been fantastic, really. Fantastic. But he had a big affair with Dorothy Provine. Do you remember Dorothy Provine? She had a series called The Roaring Twenties back in the 60s, and she had a hit record with Don't Call Lulu. You can drink your with a friend, but don't call Lulu. Anyway, he had a big affair with her, and she found out. So she came back, and apparently she lost like 2 stone in weight. She was so upset about it all, you know. Anyway, he followed her back, and it was all over with Provine. And what he actually said was, I can't help it, Dot, he says, my Willie's like a Geiger counter that finds trouble for men. What a line.
I know, I did hear, I think it was in your book, actually, that he said it was all over, and he was back sleeping with her, and he calls out in the middle of the night, Dorothy. And
That's how she found out. She was in bed and she said, you bastard, you're having an affair with that Dorothy Provine. How do you know? You were calling Dorothy out in your sleep. He said, but your name's Dorothy. She said, yeah, but you call me Dot. Sharp or what?
It was around this time that that you sort of bumped into them in London. Is that right? Did he just bump into them in the street or how did it happen?
In the street. Well, what it was... I'd met her when I was about 3 years old. I can remember it to this day. My granny took me to the New Theatre in Cardiff where she was appearing, which is a big star, and because she went to see her because she'd stayed with her. And I'm a little kid, and I can see her. I'm looking at her like this, and she said, he's a bit of his own man. Anyway, that was the last time I saw her until I was grown up. And I'd gone to London with my father for an audition, I think, and it was my father and me, and we're walking down Water Street. And who's walking towards us but Roger Moore, Dorothy Squires, and Norman Newell, the music producer. And she sees my father. "Bert," she said. And she gives him this whopping big kiss. And she says, "Look at him, Rog. I knew him when I had big tits and straw in my hair." So they were going on the way to see one of these little private viewing cinemas in Water Street, because the film Tammy Temujin was coming out, and they were going to listen to the song because she'd written it. So she drags us in now, me and my old man and her and Norman Newell and Roger Moore, and off we go watching this film. And she's got champagne and we're all half cut. And then we watched the film, we come out. She said, "Right, we're having a party now. I got a table booked," she said, "up at Raymond's Review Bar." So off we go to Raymond's Review Bar, and she's got this big table all booked for herself now. The doorman says, have you got a ticket or whatever it was? Have you got a pass?" She said, "I don't need a pass. My face is my pass." And just walked straight in. And Roger Moore was such a charming bloke. I can see why he charmed people. He was Mr. Charlie Charm, he was. I had some photographs of me, some publicity pictures, and there's one of me doing an impression of Sammy Davis. You know, I had the glasses on doing it, so. And anyway, he looks up, and there's a picture of Sammy Davis on a hoarding, because he was about to come over or something. And he said, "Hey, John, there's a bloke up there taking a mickey out of you." "Now, I'm 20 or 19 or something, and this is the Saint. He's a big star, see? He's done the Saint." Yeah. And he could make you feel like important. Do you know what I mean? He's that kind of guy.
Yeah. And actually, let's finish with Roger. Then let's get Roger's and Dot's marriage over with.
Yeah.
As you said, he had a built-in Geiger counter for trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
And he went to make a film in Italy or something like that.
Yeah, well, how she found out that this is something else. He went off to make a film in Rome, I think. Dorothy used to say that you could never find him. He'd always be in the best hotel. So you just ring the best hotel in Rome and you find him, see? So she couldn't find him, didn't know where he was. So she went up to her father-in-law's who lived in Erith. And she's about to knock the door at his flat. And the woman next to her says, "Oh, Mr. Moore's in hospital." So she said, "I didn't know my father-in-law was ill." "No, not your father-in-law, your husband." She didn't know he was back in the country. Roger was back. And he had kidney stones and he was in hospital. And he didn't tell her. She finds out where he is. And she storms into the hospital and says, "Why didn't you tell me you're back? I know you've been having an affair, da, 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 da." Anyway, apparently a lot of letters came after he'd left the hospital. They redirected to Bexley, where she lived, and they were all in Italian. So she could see the kisses on the bottom. She knew something was up. So she took it down to the Astor Club in London and saw one of the waiters. She said, "Can you translate this? You don't want to know what he just said, Dorothy." "I want to know," she said. I got to stop myself saying what she said because she's swear like a trooper. Anyway, he translated it and turned out it was Louisa and there was a big affair going on. So she confronted him and he left. And then she found out where he was living and she went around there. She dolled herself up, put all her jewels on, gave the Ford Thunderbird, drove around and threw bricks through every window in the house. So he comes out and he grabs her mother. He said, "Dorothy, your hand is bleeding." He says, "My effing heart is bleeding." And that's how I got the title for the book, My Heart Is Bleeding.
Oh, yeah, obviously you bleeped out.
I didn't put the effing in. My heart is bleeding.
My heart is bleeding. Did she ever get over him, do you think?
I don't think she ever did. He phoned her, you know, a week before she died. How he found she was in Llwynypia Hospital, I never know. But the phone goes in the hospital, and I'm there with Emily Squires, which is a niece, and the nurse comes and says, "There's a bloke called Roger on the phone." So she picks it up. She said, "Hello, Roger." She said, "Yes, tell Dorothy I'm thinking of her. Give her a squeeze and tell her I'm thinking of her." After all those years.
Wow.
It was really weird. I don't think he ever really got... I know I think he moved in originally to further his career, but I think she was such a charismatic character. I think he did love her in the end. And it was one of those relationships. It was, you know, there were always arguments. But there was definitely a bond there. Mm. And he even said it towards the end of his career when he's been interviewed on TV. He said, "Oh, she did a lot for me. I couldn't have probably made it without her, you know."
Coming up in part two.
She rushes around backstage. She says, "What are you doing?" And I forget what date it was, December the 7th, 1970. I looked at my book. I think I was at Bethau Workman's. I thought, that's right. She said, "Well, you're cancelling it. You're going to do the Palladium with me." I said, "What?" And I can hear her screaming from the kitchen. Oh, you're talking about this house with 22 rooms. I'm one end of the house and she's the other. And I can hear her screaming. I go down and she's got the News of the World and she's front page. Dorothy Squires in payola scandal, paying for plugs on radio. Because she'd done so many stupid ones. She did one for Roger Moore. Did I tell you that one?
No.
She took him to court for restoration of conjugal rights. She'd found it in some old book. Right. And it was still there. It was still there. And she won the case. You can't get, but he didn't go back, did he? You can't make somebody go back.